lonesome. Nay, he speaked grim from under his hood. Pro valleysman, my sleeping hour's come at last. Truman Napes didn't understand. It ain't sundown yet. What's your meaning? I ain't so sleepy, so why are you now? But through that mournsome gate the Hawaii man treaded. Truman was puzzling now and called out, It ain't no time for sleeping, bro Hawaii. It's time for scavin' wool-fresh gear of the old uns. Into that silent closure, Truman followed his partner Scaver. Black and twisted rocks was lying everywhere. In the sky it was black and busted. The Hawaii man sank to his knees, praying. Truman's heart was struck chillsome, see? A cold hand of wind unhooded that kneeling Hawaii man. Truman seen his partner was a long-dyed corpse, half skeleton and half maggoty meat, and that cold hand of wind was old Georgie's hand, yeah? The devil what was standing there waving a crooked spoon. Wasn't you aching and lonesome outside, my presh? Speak that king of devils to the man of Hawaii, wandering the lands of the living, with a stony soul and ready died? Why didn't you obey my summoning sooner, you foolsome man? Then old Georgie sunk his crooked spoon through the Hawaii man's sockets, yeah, and dug out the soul, dripping in smeary brain, and crunched it, yeah? It cracked tween his horsey teeth. The man of Hawaii folded over and was suddenwise just one more black and twisted rock littering the closure. Old Georgie swallowed the Hawaii man's soul, wiped his mouth, ass belched and started hicking. Barbarin souls, delish and fine, that devil rhymed, dancing up to Truman. Walnuts pickled, sourest wine. Truman couldn't move one limb, nay, so scarysome was that sight, see? But valley's souls are pure and strong and melt like honey on my tongue. The devil's breath stunk fishy and farty. 50-50 your deal, it said. Old Georgie licked his own crooked and warty spoon. Do you want your half now or when you're dead, Truman Napes III of Mormon Valley? Well, now Truman got his limbs back and rabbited and ran and fell out of the mournsome gate and slid down that screesome mountain for his life, never looking behind him, not once. When he got back to the valleys, everyone stared in amazement even before he voiced his ventures. Truman's hair had been black as crows before, but now it was whiter than surf, every single hair. You'll memory I, Zachary, was curled in my hidey nick in the iconry, listening to Napes telling that mildewy yarn to my unwelcome dwelling guest, and showing Marinim his family icons of dead lifes. He teached her their meanings and usins for a fair few beats. Then Napes said he'd got to go fix nets, and off he went, leaving Marinim alone. Now he'd not been gone hardly any time before the prescient called out in the dark. So what do you reckon about Truman, Zachary? Oh, I'd got the shock. I didn't dream she knowed I was there eavesdropping. But she faked her voice like weren't her plan to embarrass nor shame me. Nay, she faked her voice like we'd both gone to the iconry together. Do you reckon Truman's just an old woman's stupid yarner, or do you reckon it got some true in it? No point me thinking I weren't there neither, nay, 'cause she knowed I was there, no frettin'. Up I stood and walked through the shelves to where the prescient sat, sketching the icon. My eyes had got owlier in the dim, and I could see Marinim's face properly now. This place, it's got the holy of holies, I told her. This is Somni's dwelling you're in. My voice had got my strongest say-so, though my eavesdropping made it weaker. No offlander's got no business trespassing through our icons. Marinim was politesome as I weren't. I asked Abbess's permission to enter. She say so'd I could. I ain't touching no icon but Nape's families. He say so'd I could. Please, explain why you're fretting so, Zachary. I want to understand, but I can't.
See? That damn impression think to your attacks before you think of them yourself.
You may be stupid in our abbess, I tell her, coolsome and mean now, and you may be stupid in Ma and my family and the whole damn at Nine Valleys, but you ain't stupid in me, nay, not for one beat. I know it, you ain't saying the whole true. Now I'd surprised her for once, and a pleasing feeling it was to stop my skulking and show my thinkings to the open day. Marinim sort of frowned.
I ain't saying the whole true about what?
Yeah, I'd got Queen Smart cornered proper.
But why you're here sussing our lands, sussing our ways, sussing us?
Marinim sighed and put Nape's icon back on its shelf. What matters here ain't part true or whole true, Zachary, but harm or not harming, yeah.
What she said next was a spiker through my guts.
Ain't you yourself got a secret what you're hiding this whole true to Everin, Zachary?
My thinking went blurry. How could she know about Slusha's crossing? That was years ago. Was Prescience working with the Kona?
Did they have some smart what dug deep and dark looking for buried shames and mines? I didn't say nothing.
I swear it, Zachary, she said. I vow and son me.
Oh, I shouted at her. Offlanders and savages don't even believe in Somni, so she'd got no business dirtying Somni's name with her tongue.
Marinim speaked calm and quietsome like always.
I was way wrong, she said. She believed in Somni, yeah, even more than I did, but if I preferred it, she'd lay her vow on her son Anafi. On his luck in life, she vowed, no prescient plan to harm any valleysman, nor ever. And prescience respected my tribe way, way, way more than I knowed. She vowed when she could tell me the whole true, she'd do it. And she left, taking her victory with her.
I stayed a whiles and visited Pa's icon, and seeing his face carved in the grain, I seen his face lying in Waipio River. Oh, hot tears of shame and sorrying brimmed out. Head of Bailey's dwelling I was supposed to be, but I'd got no stronger say-so in a Friday lambkin, and no springier wit in a coney in a trap.
Bring me evidence, valleysman, Abbess had said, or hold your counsel. So now I thinked every moment how to get my evidence. And if I couldn't get grasp of it honorably well, so be it. I'd have to sneak my evidence. A bunch of days later, my family was over at Aunt B's with Marinim, 'cause she was learning honeying. I came back from herding early, yeah, with the sun still above the koalas, and I crept into our visitor's room and searched for her gear bag. Didn't take long. The shipwoman had stowed it under the planking. Inside was little gifts like what she'd given us when she first come, but some smart gear, too. Several boxes what didn't rattly, but had got no lid neither, so I couldn't open them. An eerie tool what I didn't know, shaped and smooth as a goat's shin bone, but gray and heavy like lava stone. 2 pairs of well-crafted boots, 3, 4 books of sketchings and writings and secret prescient tongue. I don't know where them sketchings was drawn, but it weren't on Big Isle. Nay, there was plants and birds what I'd not even seen in dreamings, nay. Last was most wondersome. 1 big silvery egg it was, sized a babbitt's head, with dents and markings on it what fingers rested in. Its fat weight was eerie, and it wouldn't roll. I know that don't sound senseful, but yarns about old and smart and flying dwellings and growing babbits and bottles and pictures zooming across the whole world ain't senseful neither,
but that's how it was, so storymen and old books tell it. So I cuffed that silvery egg in my own hands, and it started purring and glowing some, yeah, like it was living. Quick sharp, I let go of the egg, and it died dull. Was my hand's warmness making it stir? So hungrysome was my curio, I held it again, and the egg vived warm till a ghost girl flickered and appeared there. Yeah, a ghost girl, right above the egg, as truesome as I'm sitting here. Her head and neck was just floating there, like flexion in moon water, and she was talking. Now I got scared and took my hands off the silvery egg, but the ghost girl stayed, yeah. What did she do? Nothing but talk and talk like I am to you, but not a normally story man she weren't. Nay, she was talking in olden tongue, and not performing none, just answering questions what a man's hushly voice asked, though he never showed his face. For every word I understanded, about 5, 6 followed that I didn't. The ghost girl's lips was fixed in a bitter smile, but her creamy eyes was sad, so sad, but proud and strong, too. When I got enough spunk, I speaked up. I murmured, "Sis, are you a lost soul?" Ignored me, she did. So I asked, "Sis, can you see me?" Finally, I caught the ghost girl who weren't talking to me and couldn't see me. I tried stroking her cloudy skin and bristly hair, but I vow it, my fingers passed right through, yeah, just like a water flexion. Papery moths blowed through her shimmering eyes and mouth too, to and fro, yeah, to and fro. Oh, eerie and so beautsome and blue she was, my soul was aching. Suddenwise the ghost girl vanished back into that egg, and a man took her place. A ghost prescient he was. This un could see me, and fearsome he speaked at me. "Who are you, boy, and where is Marinim?" The prescient leaped near, and his face growed. Growly and fangy his voice was. "I asked you 2 questions, boy. Answer 'em now, or I'll cuss your family so diresome no babbit'll live past 1 moon old, now nor never." I sweated and gulped dry. "Zachary, sir," I said, "and Marinim's how's it and fine, yeah, she's at Aunt B's learning honeyin'." The prescient shootered my soul with his eyes, yeah, settling whether or nay to believe me. "And does Marinim know her host civvies his guest gear when she's out? Answer truesome now, 'cause I can tell a liar." I was flinching for pain as I shaked my head. "Listen close. That man had as much say-so as any abbess. You'll put this orison, this egg you're holding now, back where you finded it. You'll tell no one, but no one about it. Or else do you know what I'll do?" "Yeah," answered I. "'Cause my family so diresome no babbit'll ever live." "Yeah, you cogged it," answered that thundery man. "I'll be watching Zachary o' Bailey's dwelling," that ghost prescient speaked. See, he even knowed my dwelling like old Georgie. He vanished, and the silvery egg simmered quiet, then died. Quick sharp, I packed Marinim's belongings in her gear bag and stowed it back under the planking, wishing I'd never gone nosying. See, what I'd found weren't evidence for my doubtings to show abbess. Nay, what I finded was a smart cuss on my stoned luck, and I fessed it to me myself, a grimy smear on my honor as a host. But I couldn't forget that ghost girl neither. Nay, she haunted my dreams, waking and sleeping. So many feelings I'd got, I didn't have room enough for 'em. Oh, being young ain't easy, 'cause everything you're puzzling and anxin' it for the first time. Lady Moon growed fat, Lady Moon growed thin, and suddenwise, 3 of the 6 moons before the prescient ship was due back for Marinim had ready gone by. A sort of truce was laid between me and our guest now. I didn't trust the ship woman, but I tolerated her round my dwelling politesome enough so I could spy her better. Then one squally afternoon, the first of several happenings fell, yeah, happenings what changed that truce into something where her fate and mine was binded together like twines of vine cord. One rainy morning, Bro Monroe's littlest facugly came screeing up gulch to find me huddling neath brella leaves on Ranch Rise, fetching direst news to me he was. My sis Catkin had been line-fishing on Dog Rock shore and had trod on a scorpion fish, and now she was dying of shakes and heats at Monroe's dwelling. The herblist Wimoway, yeah, Rosa's ma, was tending her, and Leary the Hilo Healer was doing his enchanties too, but Catkin's life was fading, yeah? Strapping mustlers don't usually survive a scorpion fish, nay. And poor little Catkin was dying and had got 2 hours, maybe three. Fucugly minded the goats, and I slid down through the dogwood trees to Monroe's dwelling, and yeah, there it was, just like Fucugly had said it. Catkin was burning and breathing chokely, and she didn't know no one's face. Wimoway tweezed out the poison fins and bathed the stinging in noni pulp, and Susie was pressing cool sops to calm her head. Jonas was gone praying to Sonmi at the iconry. Beardy Leary was mumbling his Hilo spells and shaking his magic tufty spikers to drive off evil spirits. Didn't seem Leary was helping much, nay, Catkin was dying. The air smelled of it. But Ma wanted Leary there. See, you'll believe in a million different beliefins if you reckon just one of 'em may aid you. So what could I do? Except sit there and hold beloved Catkin's burning hands and memory my stock still useless self-watching cone of bull-whipping and circling pawn Adam. Now maybe the voice was Pa's or maybe Sonmi's or maybe no one's but mine, but a hushly voice popped a bubble just inside my ear. Marinim, it said. Yibber told me Marinim was up Gus Jaw's gulch, so there I ran, and yeah, there she was, filling little smart jars of water up Gus Jaw's gulch in the steaming rain. See, Walt had passed by her earlier and told her the Yibber. The Prussian had got her spesh gear bag with her, and I thanked Sonmi for that. Good afternoon, called the shipwoman when she seen me splashing upstream. No, it ain't, I shouted back. Catkin's dying. Marinim listened griefsome enough as I telled her about the scorpion fish, but she sorried. Nay, she didn't have no healing smart, and anyway, Wimoway's herblins and Leary's cantations was Big Isle healing, and that was best for Big Isle sick folks, wasn't it, nay? Dingo shit, said I. She shaked her head so sadsome. Slywise, I speak now. Catkin calls you auntie, and she bleefs your kin. You surefire behave in our dwelling like your kin. Is that just another fake for you to study us some more? Another part of your not the whole true? Marinim flinched. No, Zachary, it ain't. Well then, I gambled some luck. I say you got spesh smart what'll help your kin. Marinim threw a spiker in her words. Why don't you civvy through my gear again and thief my spesh prescient smart yourself? Yeah, she knowed about me and the silvery egg. She'd been faking she didn't, but she knowed. No point naysaying, so I didn't. My sis is dying while we're standing here knuckling. So much rivers and rain in the world it flowed by us. Finally Marinim said, yeah, she'd come and see Catkin, but scorpion fish poison was quick and thick, and she probably couldn't do nothing to save my little sis, and I'd best understand that truth now. I didn't say yea or nay, I just leaded her quick sharp down to Monroe's dwelling. When the prescient walked in, Wimoway explained what she'd done, though Beardy Leary said, ooh, a devil's drawn near. Ooh, I sense her with my spesh powers. Catkin had gone under now, yeah? She lay still and stiff as an icon, just a wispin' breathin' scratched in her throat. Marinim's griefsome face just said, nay, she's too far gone, I can't do nothin'. and she kissed my sis's forehead goodbye, walked back sadsome into the rain. "Oh, see the prescient," Leary crowed. "Their smart can move magicky ships astill, but only the holy chant o' Angel Lazarus can tempt back the girl's soul from them despairin' marshes between life and death." Despair I felt. My sis was dying, rain was drummin', but that same voice didn't shut up in my ear. "Marinim." I didn't know why, but I followed her out. Sheltering in Monroe's pottery doorway, she was staring at the rods o' rain. "I ain't got no right to ask you for favors. I ain't been a good host, nay, I been a piss-poor bad un, but..." I'd ran out of words. The prescient didn't move nor look at me, nay. "The life of your tribe's got a natural order. Catkin it a treaded on that scorpion fish if I'd been here or not." Rainbirds spilt their Galoshian Galician song. "I'm just a stupid goat herder, but I reckon just by being here, you're busting this natural order. I reckon you're killing Catkin by not acting. And I reckon if it was your son Onofi lying there with scorpion fish poison melting his heart and lungs, this natural order'd not be so important to you, yeah?" She didn't answer, but I knowed she was listening. "Why is a prescient's life worth more'n a valleysman's?" She lost her calm. "I ain't here to play Lady Somni every time something bad happens and click my fingers and make it right. I'm just human, Zachary, like you, like anyone. I promised it won't be every time something bad happens, it's just now." Tears was in her eyes. "That ain't no promise you can keep or break." Suddenwise, I finded myself telling her every flea true about Slusha's crossing, yeah, everything. How I'd leaded the Kona to kill Pa and slave Adam, and had never fessed to knowin' until that very beat. I didn't know why I was spilling this cork secret to my enemy, not till the very end, when I cogged its meanin' and telled her too. "What I just teach you about me and my soul is a spike against my throat and a gag over my mouth. You can tell old Ma Yibber what I telled you and ruin me any time you want. She'll believe you, and so she should, 'cause it's true, every word, and folks'll believe you 'cause they sense my soul is stoned. Now if you got any smart, yeah, anything, what may help Catkin now, give it me. Tell it me. Do it. No one'll ever... ever know. Nay, I vow it. Just you and me." Marinim placed her hands on her head like it boomed up with woe, and she mummed to herself something like, "If my Preston ever find it out, my whole faculty'd be disbanded." Yea, times was she used whole flocks of words that I didn't know. From a lidless jar in her gear bag, she got out a tiny small as an ant egg turquoise stone and telled me to sneak it into Catkin's mouth, so slywise no one seen, nay, nor even thinked they seen. "And for Somni's sake," Marinim warned me, "if Catkin lives, and I ain't promising she will, make sure the herbalist gets the hooray hooray for healing her, not that voodoo snake oilster from Hilo, yeah?" So I took that turquoise medicine and thanked her just once. Marinim said, "Don't mention no words, not now and never while I'm living." And that promise I kept tight. Into my presh sis's mouth I dropped it as I changed her sop cloth, like Marinim had telled me. So no one saw nothing. And what happened? 3 days later, Catkin was back learning in the schoolry, yeah? 3 days! Well, I stopped looking for evidence that prescience was spying to slave us. Leary from Hilo crowed to the toads on the roads, and the whole wide world, no healer was greater than he, not even the prescience, though folks mostly believed Wimaway done it, yeah, not him. Coney's in Rostataro we was eating one supper about a moon after Catkin sick when Marinan made a surprise announcement. She meant to climb up Mauna Kea before the ship returned, she said, for to see what she'd see. Ma speaked first, ready worrisome. What for, sis Marinan? Ain't nothing up Mauna Kea but never-ending winter and a big heap of rocks. Now Ma'd not said what we was all thinking, 'cause she didn't want to look barbaric and savage, but Susie didn't hold back none. Aunt Merrill, if you go up there, old Georgie'll freeze you and dig out your soul with the cruel and crooked spoonie and eat it so you'll never be reborned and your body'll be turned into a frostbited boulder. You want to stay here in the valleys where it's safe. Marinan didn't mix Susie none. She just said prescience had got smart what had ward old Georgie away. Climbing Mauna Kea was necessary to map windward, she said, and anyhow, Valley's men needed more lowdown on Kona movements over leeward and Waimea town. Now time was such words aroused my suspicions buzzin', but I didn't think that now, nay, though I was diresome worried for our guest. Well, the yipper was busy for days when this news jumped out. The shipwoman's climbing Mauna Kea! Folks dropped by, warning Marinan not to go poking her nose into Oji's closure, or she'd never come back down. Even Napes visited, saying climbing Mauna Kea in a story was one thing, doing it for real was cracked and crazed. Abbess said Marinan could come and go where she pleased, but she'd not say so, knowing to guide Marinan up. Just too unknown and risky that summit was. 3 days up and three more down, and dingoes and Kona and Somni knows what on the way. And anyhow, preparation for the Honoka'a bartering was needin' all hands in the dwellings. Now I surprised everyone, yeah, me too, when I settled to go with her. I weren't known as the bravest bald bullock in the barn, so why'd I done it? Simple enough. One, I owed Marinan for catkin. Two, my soul was ready half stone, yeah? Sure fire I'd not get rebirth, so what I'd got to lose? Better if old Georgie ate my soul than someone else's who'd get rebirth else, yeah? That ain't brave, nay, it's just sense. Ma didn't act pleased. A busy enough time in the valleys, 'cause of harvest coming and all. But come the dawn, Marinan and me set off. She give me journey grinds, what she'd smoked and brined, and said Pa'da prouded to see me so growed and gutsy. Jonas give me a spec sharp and fine rockfish spiker, and Susie give amulets a pearl shell to dazzle and blind Georgie's eye if he chased us. Cobry, my cuz, was over to minder my goats. He give a bag of raisins from his family's finds. Catkin was last. She give me a kiss and marrying him too, and made us both promise we'd be back in 6 days. Easily as Lucius, we didn't climb the Kui Kui Haele track. Nay, we trekked inland southly up Waiulili stream, and I cogged the clearing by Hialawi Falls where I'd surprised the Kona what killed Pa 5-6 years before. Overgrown now it was, just traces of bygone campfires scorch in the middle. In Hialawi Pool's shallows, I spikered a couple of rockfish with Jonas's gift to last out our grinds. Rain fell, so the Waiulili stream gushed too fierce for footin', so we bushwhacked up through Sugarcane, yeah? A hard half-day's going it was till we cleared the Kohala Ridge. The windy open made us gasp, and through rifting clouds we seen Mauna Kea higher in the sky, yeah? Now I seen Mauna Kea from Honoka'a before, of course, but a mountain you're planning on climbing ain't the same as the one you ain't. It ain't so pretty, nay? Hush enough, and you'll hear it. The cane thinned to tindry pines, and we got to Olden's Waimea way. Several miles long this ancient and cracked road we clopped till we met a fur trapper and his laughing doggy resting by a sloping pond. Old Yanagi was his name, and he'd got muke lung so bad, by and by young Yanagi'd be taking over the family business, I think. We said we was herbless, sivian for fresh plants, and maybe Yanagi'd believed us, and maybe he didn't. But he bartered us fungus dew for rockfish and warned us why Waimea town weren't so friendsome as it had once been. Nay, Kona say so'd and knuckled fickle-wise, and you couldn't guess their behavings. A mile or so eastly of Waimea town, we heard shod hoofs clopping, and we dived off the track in the nick before three Kona fighters on black stallions and their horse boy on a pony galloped by. Hate and fear quaked me, and I wanted to kill him like prawns on a skewer, but slower than that. The boy I thought may have been Adam, but I always think that about young Kona. They was wearing helms, so I couldn't see too sure, nay. We didn't speak much from then, 'cause speaking can be heard by spires what you can't spy. Southly through shrubbery heath we tromped now till we got to Wideway. Wideway I'd heard of from Storyman, and here it was, an open, long, flat a roadstone. Saplings and bush was mustling up, but wondersome and wild was that windy space. Marinim said it was named Airport in Olden's tongue, where their flying boats had anchored down, yeah, like wild geese on the Pololu marshes. We didn't cross Wideway, nay, we skirted it. There wasn't no cover, see? By sundown, we tented up in a cactusy hollow, and when it was dark enough, I lit us a fire. Lonesome, I felt, to be away from my valleys and kin. But in that no man's land, Marinim's mask was slipping, and I was seeing her more clear than I'd ever done before. I asked her straight, "What's it like, the whole world, the off-lands over the ocean?" Her mask had not slipped right off, though. "What do you reckon?" So I telled her my imaginings of places from old books and pics in the schoolry, lands where the fald never falled, towns bigger than all a big eye, and towers of stars and suns blazing higher in Mauna Kea, bays of not just one precious ship, but a million, smart boxes what make delish grinds more than anyone can eat, smart pipes what gush more brew than anyone can drink, places where it's always spring and no sick, no knuckling and no slaving. Places where everyone's a beautsome pure birth who lives to be 150 years. Marinim pulled her blankie tighter. "My parents and their generation believed somewhere whole cities of olden survived the fall beyond the oceans, just like you, Zachary. Old-time names haunted their imaginings. Melbourne, Auckland, Joburg, Buenos Yerbes, Mumbai, Singapore." The shipwoman was teaching me what no valleys man had ever heard, and I listened tight and wordless. Finally, 5 decades after my people's landing at Prescience, we relaunched the ship what bringed us there. Dingoes howled in the far, far about folks soon to die. I prayed somni it weren't us. They finded the cities where the old maps promised. Dead rubble cities, jungle-choked cities, plague-rotted cities, but never a sign of them living cities of their yearnings. We prescience didn't believe our weak flame of civilized was now the brightest in the whole world, and further we sailed, year by year, but we didn't find no flame brighter. So lonesome we felt. Such a fresh burden for 2,000 pairs of hands. I vow it, there ain't more in several places in whole world what got the smart of the 9 valleys. Anxin and proudful at one time hearing them words made me like a pa, and like she and me weren't so different as a god and worshipper, nay. Second day fluffsome clouds rabbited westly, and that snaky leeward sun was hissing loud and hot. We drank like wells from icy and sooty brooks. Higher to cooler air we climbed till no mozzie pricked us no more. Stunty and dry woods was crossed by swaths of black and razory lava spitted and spewed by Mauna Kea. Snaily some going was them rock fields, yeah. Just brush that rock light and your fingers would bleed fast and wetly, so I binded my boots and hands in strips of hide bark and did the same for Marinim. Blisters scabbed her foots. Her soles had not got my goat tough, see? But that woman weren't no moaner, nay, whatever else she was. We tented up in a forest of needles and thorns, and a waxy mist hit our campfire, but it hid any sneaker-uppers too, and I got nervy. Our bodies was busted by tiredness, but our minds wasn't sleepy yet, so we talked some while eating. "You really ain't fiery," said I, jerking my thumb upwards, "a meetin' Georgie when we get to the summit, like Truman Napes did?" Marinim said the weather was way more scaresome to her. I spoke my mind. "You don't believe he's real, do you?" Mirnam said old Georgie weren't real for her. Nay, but he could still be real for me.
Then who, asked I, tripped the fall if it weren't old Georgie?
Eerie birds, I didn't know Yibbered news in the dark for a beat or two. The prescient answered, Olin's tripped their own fall.
Oh, her words was a rope of smoke.
But Olin's and got the smart.
I memory she answered, Yeah, Olin's smart mastered six, miles, seeds, and made miracles ordinary. But it didn't master one thing, nay, a hunger in the hearts of humans, yeah, a hunger for more.
More what? I asked. Olin's got everything.
Oh, more gear, more food, faster speeds, longer lives, easier lives, more power, yeah. Now the whole world is big, but it weren't big enough for that hunger what made Olin's rip out the skies and boil up the seas. And poisoned soil with crazed atoms, and donkey about with rotted seeds, so new plagues was born, and Babbitts was freak-birthed. Finally, bitly, then quick-sharp, states busted into barbaric tribes, and the civilized days ended, except for a few folds and pockets here and there, where its last embers glimmer.
I asked why Marinim had never spoke this yarnin' in the valleys.
Valley's men had not want to hear, she answered. That human hunger birthed the civilize, but human hunger killed it too.
I know it from other tribes off land what I stayed with. Times are you say a person's beliefs ain't true, they think you're saying their lives ain't true, and their truth ain't true.
Yeah, she was probably right.
Third day out was clear and blue. But Marinim's legs was jellyfishin', so I lugged everything on my back except for her gear bag. We'd trekked over the mountain's shoulder to the southly face, where the scars of an olden track zigzagged summitwards. Around noon, Marinim rested while I gathered enough firewood for two faggots, 'cause we was in the last trees now. Looking down toward Mauna Loa, we squinted a troop of horses on Saddle Road, their cone of metal spicklin' in sunlight. So high up we was, their horses was just termite size. I wished I could have crushed them savages between my finger and thumb and wiped the slime off on my pants. I prayed sonned me no Kona ever turned up this summit track, 'cause fine places there was for an ambushin', and Marinim and me couldn't knuckly hard nor long, I reckoned. I didn't see no hoof prints nor tentin' marks anyhow. The trees ended and the wind got muslier and angrier, bringing not a sniff of smoke, no farming, no dung, no nothing, except fine, fine dust. Birds was rarer too in them sheer and scrubby slopes, just buzzards surfing high. By evening we got to a cluster of olden buildings, what Marinim said had been a village for stromners, what was priests o' the smart what read the stars. This village had not been lived in since the fall, and no more desolate place I'd ever seen. No water nor soil, and the night fell, oh, fangy and cold. So we dressed thick and lit a fire in an empty dwelling. Flamelights danced with shadows round them unloved walls. I was anxious about the summit next day, so in part to blind my mind, I asked Marinim if Abbess spoke true when she said the whole world flies round the sun, or if the men o' Hilo was true, saying the sun flies round the whole world. Abbess is quite correct, answered Marinim.
Then the true true is different to the seeming true, said I.
Yeah, and it usually is, I memory Marinim saying,
and that's why true true is precious and rarer in diamonds.
By and by sleep hooded her, but my thinkings kept me awake till a silent woman came and sat by the fire, sneezing and shivering hushly. Her necklace of cowrie shells said she was a Honomu fisher, and if she'd have been living, she'd have been juicing, no frettin'. Into the fire the woman uncurled her fingers, into the prettiest bronze and ruby petals, but she just sighed lonesomer in a bird in a box in a well. See, them flames couldn't heat her up none.
She'd got pebbles 'stead of eyeballs, and I wondered if she was climbing Mauna Kea to let old Georgie finally put her soul to stony sleep. Dead folk hear livin's thinkins, and that drowned fisher gazed at me with them pebbles, nodding ya, and she took out a pipe for comfort, but I didn't ask for no skank. Long beats later, I waked. The fire was dying, and the stone Honomu'd taked her leave. No tracks that un left in the dust, but I smelt the smoke from her pipe for a beat or two. See, I thinked, Marinim knows a lot about smart and life, but Valley's men know more about death. Fourth dawn was a wind not of this world, nay, it warped that brutal and ringing light and hooped the horizon and ripped words out of your mouth and your body's warmness through your tarp and furs. Summit trail from the Strandner's village was busted and roaded diresome, yeah. Great mouthfuls, land slipped away, and no leaves nor roots nor mosses, even just dry and freeze, dust and grit, what scratched our eyes like a crazed woman. Our valley's boots was shredded by now, so Marinim gived us both a pair of smart prescient boots, made of I didn't know what, but wool warm and soft and tough they was, so we could go on. 4 or 5 miles later, the ground flatted out so you didn't feel you was on a mountain no more. Nay, more like an ant on a table. Just a flatness hanging in nothing between worlds. Finally, near noon, we rounded a bend, and I gasped shocksome, 'cause here was the closure, just like Truman had said it, though its walls wasn't as tall as a redwood, nay, more a spruce high. The track leaded straight to the steely gate, yeah? But its unbusted walls weren't so endless long, nay, you could have walked round it in a quarter of a morning. Now inside the closure on rising ground was the Bulls of Temple, yeah? The eeriest olden buildings in Hawaii or whole world, who knows? How could we get to them, though? Marinim stroked that awesome gate and muttered, we'd need a damn it tiresome flashbang to get these off their hinges, yeah? Out of her gear bag, though, she got not a flashbang, nay, but a smart rope, like the prescience bartered sometimes, fine and light. 2 stumps stuck up above the steely gate, and she tried to lassoop one. The wind was craftier in her aim, but I tried next and lassooped it first time, and up old Georgie's closure we scaled hand by hand by hand. Inside that dreadsome place at the world's top, yeah, the wind hushed like a hurricane's clear eye. The sun was deafening so high up, yeah, it roared and time streamed from it. No paths there wasn't inside the closure, just a million boulders like in Truman Napes's yarn. The bodies of the stoned and unsold they was, and I wondered if Marinim or me or both would be boulders by nightfall. 10, 12 temples waited here and there, white and silvery and gold and bronze with squat bodies and round crowns and mostly windowless. The nearest one was just 100 paces away, and we set off for it first. I asked if this was where olden's worshipped their smart. Marinim spoke, marveling as much as me. They wasn't temples, nay, but observatories, what olden's used to study the planets and moons and stars, and the space between to understand where everything begins and where everything ends. We stepped carefully between them twisted rocks. Round one I seed crushed cowrie shells from Honomu'e, and I knowed it was my visitor the night before. The wind bringed my grandpa's voice whispering from the far, far, Judas. Eerie, yeah, but shocking, nay, 'cause everything in that place was eerie. Judas. I didn't tell Marinim. How she got that observatory door open, I ain't knowin', so don't mozzie me. A sort of umblicky cord between the door's dusted and rusty niche and her orison egg worked in a beat or two. Now I was busy guarding us from the dwellers of that closure. My grandpa's wispins was now cussin' half faces what disappeared when you stared straight. A sharp hiss as the observatory door cracked open, air guffed out stale and sour like it was breathed before the fall, and yeah, so it probably was. In we stepped, and what do we find? Describing such smart ain't easy. Gear there was what we ain't memoried on Hawaii, so its names ain't memoried neither, yeah? Almost nothing in there could I cog. Shimmering floors, white walls and roofs, one great chamber, round and sunk, filled by a mighty tube wider in a man and longer in five, what Marinim named a radio telescope, what was, she said, the furthest seeing eye Olin's ever made. Everything white and pure as Somni's robes, yeah? Not one flea of dirt, except what we tromped in. Tables and chairs sat round waiting for sitters on balconies made of steel, so our foots gonged. Even the shipwoman was smacked wondersome by all this perfect smart. She showed her orison everything we seed. The orison glowed and purred, and windows came and went. It's memory in the place, explained Marinim, though I didn't understand so good, and I asked what that smart egg was, true be telled. Marinim rested a beat and drank a mouth of brew from her flask. An orison is a brain and a window, and it's a memory. Its brain lets you do things like unlock observatory doors what you just seen. Its window lets you speak to other orisons in the far, far. Its memory lets you see what orisons in the past seen and heard, and keep what my orison sees and hears safe from forgetting. Shame to memory, Marinim of Mycivian I was, yeah? But if I didn't ask then, I may not have get the chance ever, so I asked it. The shimmerin' and butesome girl what I seen in this orison before, was she a memory or a window? Marinim hesitated. Memory? I asked if the girl was living still. Nay, answered Marinim. I asked, was she a prescient? She hesitated and said she wanted to tell me a whole true now, but that other valley's men had not be ready for its hearing. I vowed on Pa's icon to say nothing, nay, to no one. Very well. She was Somni, Zachary. Somni, the freak-birth human, what your ancestors believed was your god. Somni was a human like you and me? I'd never think so, nor did Abbas ever speak such lonesomeness, nay. Somni had been birthed by a god of smart named Darwin. That's what we believed. Did Marinim believe this Somni lived on Prescience Eye or on Big Eye? She was born and died hundreds of years ago across the ocean west-norwestly, so Marinim speaked. On a peninsula, all dead-landed now, but its old-time name was Nea Socopris, and its ancient one Korea. A shortened Judas life Sonmi had, and only after she died did she find say-so over pure bloods and freak births, thinkins. All this shocking newness buzzed and busted my brain, and I didn't know what to believe. I asked what Sonmi's memory was doing in Marinim's orson hundreds of years after. Now I seen Marinim was sorry and she begin, yeah? Somni was killed by olden chiefs what feared her, but before she died, she spoke to an orison about her acts and deedens. I got her memory in my orison, cause I was studying her brief life to understand you valley's men better. That's why that girl did haunted me so. I seen a sort of smart ghost. Marinim yeed. Zachary, we got many buildings to visit before nightfall. Now as we were crossing the closure to the second observatory, the boulders began speaking. Oh, you was right about the damn impressions first time, bro Zachary. She's fugging your beliefs and all up and down and in and out. I clamped my ears, but yeah, them voices went through these hands. This woman only saved Catkin's life to cloudy your thinking with debt and honor. Crampsome was them stones, shapes, and words. I clamped my jaw shut to stop me answering. She's Scavian and Sivian, Big Isle smart, what truesome belongs to valley's men. Grit devils got under my eyelids. Your pod not let no lion offlander worm into his trust, bro, nor use him as a pack mule. Them words was so true, I couldn't argue back none, and I stumbled painsome.
Marinim studied me. I didn't fess the boulders was yibber stinking her, but she seen something weren't right.
The air up here is thin and watery, she speaked, and your brain'll get tiresome hungry and make this weird place weirdsomer.
We got to the second building, and I slumped drowsy while the prescient worked the door open.
Oh, that hollerin' sun hollowed my head.
She's a sly and no frettin', Zachary.
Truman Nape's third was perched on his boulder. Marinim had not even heard him.
You bleef her or your own kin? He called me, mournsome.
Are your truths just thin and watery air?
Am I?
Oh, I was relieved the next beat when the observatory door opened.
Them ghosts and their spikery truths couldn't follow us inside, see? I suppose the smart kept them out.
So it went all afternoon long, yeah? Most of the observatories was much like the first. The prescient opened up, explored the place with her orison, and mostly forgot I was there. Me, I just sat and breathed that smart air till she was done. But stomping between buildings, twisted boulders chorused me,
Judas, and pack mule, and ship slave.
Ghosts of valleysmen pleaded me through unparting frost-bited lips, yeah?
She ain't your tribe, ain't even your color.
And then and there, oh, frightsome sense they made. I fess it here and now. Suspicion rotted me. No prescient had ever been straight with no valleysmen, and that day I knowed Marinim was no different. The boulders had changed the blue sky to angsten and flinty gray by the last building. Marinim teached me it weren't no observatory, but a generator, what made a smart magic named Electric, what worked the whole place like a heart works the body. She was woeing at the machines and all, but I was just feeling stupid and Judas for being blinded by the ship woman since she'd come elbowing into my dwelling. I didn't know what to do nor how to stop her plans, but Georgie had got his plans, cuss him. This generator's innards was different from other buildings. The prescient woman glowed with fascination as we stepped into the echoey chambers, but I didn't.
See, I knowed we wasn't alone in there. Shipwoman didn't believe me, of course, but in the biggest space where a mighty iron heart stood silent, was a sort of throne, surrounded by tables of little windows, and numbers and all. And on this throne, there was a dyed olden priest, slumping under an arched window.
The prescient swallowed hard and peered close.
A chief astronomer, I reckon, she spoke hushly. He must have suicided here when the fall came, and the sealed air saved his body from rotting.
A priest king, not a chief, I reckoned, in such a wondersome palace. She got to work memorying every inch of that doomin' place in her orison, while I approached near that priest king from the world of perfect civilize. His hair straggled, and his nails was hooky, and the years had shrunk and sagged his face some sure, but his smart sky clothes was spiff and fine. Sapphires pierced his ear, and he memoried me of Unc B's, same hoggy nose, yeah.
Listen to me, valleysman, the suicided priest king spoke. Yeah, listen. We oldens was sick with smart, and the fall was our cure.
The prescient don't know she's sick, but oh, real sick she is. Through that arch of glass, waves of snow was tossing and turning and drowning the sun.
Put her to sleep, Zachary, or she and her kind'll bring all their offland sick to your butesome valleys. I'll mind her soul well in this place, never fear.
The shipwoman was moving about with her orison, humming a prescient baby by what she'd teached Catkin and Susie.
Tick-tockin' was my thinking. Wasn't killing her barbaric and savage?
Ain't no right or wrong,
the Stromner King teached me. Just protecting your tribe or judicing your tribe, yeah? Just a strong will or a weaken. Kill her, bro. She ain't no god. She's only blood in tubes. I said I couldn't. The Yibber had tagged me murder and Abbas had called it Catherine what had exiled me from the valleys. Oh, think, Zachary, the king micked me. Think. How'll the Yibber know? Yibber'll say, that knowed all offlander ignored our yarns and ways and went trespian up Mount Achaia, and brave Zachary went long to try and minder her, but it turned out she weren't so smart what she thinked. Beats passed. All right, I answered, finally and grim. I'll spiker her when we step outside. The priest-king smiled, pleased, and didn't speak no more. Finally, my victim houseted me. Fine, said I, though I were nervy, see. The biggest thing I ever killed was goats, and now I'd vowed to kill a prescient human. She said we shouldn't set off, 'cause she didn't want to get stranded in no blizzard up here, and leaded us back out the generator. Outside, the boulders had fallen silent in the ankle snow. One snowstorm had gone, but another, bigger one, was coming, so I reckoned. We walked toward the steely gate, her in front, me gripping Jonas's spiker and testing it sharp on my thumb. Do it now, say so'd every murderous stone on Mount Achaia. Nothing to be gained by dillion, nay. Hushly I aimed at the top of the prescient's neck, and soon me have mercy on my soul. I thrust that sharky point home as hard as I could. Nay, I didn't murder her. Seeing a split beat between aiming and thrusting, Somni had mercy on my soul, yeah? She changed my aim and that spiker went flying high over that steely gate. Marinem didn't even cog, she'd nearly had her skull skewered. But I cogged, sure enough, I'd been magicked by the devil o' Mount Achaia, yeah? We all know his name, cuss him. You see something up there? Asked Marinem after my spiker. Yeah, I lied. But it weren't knowing, nay, it was just the tricks of this place. We're leaving, she said. We're leaving now. Old Georgie was outwitted, see? There weren't no means I could kill her quick sharp without my spiker, but he'd not just lay down and watch my victory, nay. I knowed that sly wise bugger of old. As I climbed up the rope with the gear bag, Mount Achaia took a lonesome breath and howled giddy in snow so I couldn't see the ground clearly, and 10 winds tore our faces, and my fingers was stiff with cold, and halfway up I slid halfway down, and that rope burned my hands. But finally I hauled myself up top and bringed up the gear bag with my painful stinging and raw palms. Marinem weren't so fast, but she weren't far from the top of the wall, when suddenwise, time stopped. Time stopped, yeah, you heard it right. For a whole world except me and a certain cunning devil, yeah, you know which and came swaggering along the wall. Time was just stopped. Snowflakes hanged, speckling the air. Old Georgie swished them aside. I tried reasoning with you, Zachary. You stubborsome boy. Now I got to use warnings and augurings and say so. Get out your blade and cut this rope through. His foot touched the rope what was holding time-freezed Marinem. Worn face screwed against the blizzard it was, and her muscles straining to climb that rope. 20 feet of nothing below. Her fall may not kill her when I let time flow again, old Georgie seen my thinking. But them rocks below'll bust her spine and legs and she'll not survive the night. I'll let her consider her fallings. I asked him why he didn't just kill Marinem himself. Why, old Georgie micked. I want you to do it, and here's why. See, if you don't cut that rope,
Inside of 3 moons, your dearsome family be dead. I vow it. I vow it. So you got a choosin'. On one side, you got brave Ma, strong Susie, bride Jonas, sweet